We have apologies from Councillor Brown, which I'll move. Seconded by Councillor Lawton. Put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. A leave of absence, just for noting, from Councillor Deeker. Confirmation of the agenda, no changes. Conflict of interest, which is just the standard reminder. And we move to public forum. Mary, welcome along. You have 5 minutes to tell us about I'll go back a step. You've obviously provided some newspaper clippings of which have been circulated, which date back 88, 89, when the formation of the port company was being discussed. So we've got that information, and so you're essentially here to speak to the annual report presentation that we received, I think, on the 13th of September from Port Otago, I think, is that?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I was here listening to that and several issues came up, and I believe that we can learn from history, which is why I provided you with those clippings which had been handed to me a couple of months before. There's a whole lot more, but you know, in the interest of you not having to read everything. But I just wanted you to be aware of that. I don't want to go over them or talk about them. I just want to know that you've read them, and sort of apropos of Mr. Faulkner's comment to Councillor Deeker about the immunity fund. So the origins of this idea has come up almost continually in the almost 30 years since the council was formed. That's a bit further down my list, but I've actually almost thrown out quite a lot of it just because you've all been sitting here since 8 a.m. I feel like writing it for you. Several issues came up when Mr. Faulkner was talking, and I'll just go down the list of his presentation. He said that he wasn't happy with the injury rate at Otago, it had increased, and the new mantra is everyone goes home healthy and safe. And I thought, well, we in Kerry's Bay also want to be healthy and safe while we were at home and free from the oral incursions created by Port Otago operations. So we're well rested and we go to work healthy and safe. So I want to broaden the healthy and safe idea. He mentioned the Port Environment and Noise Liaison Committee meeting. Now, he said it's for the port to keep the community informed. It is reciprocal, but I suggest to all of you that you go to the DCC 2GP hearing website, port zone section, read my submission and all of the Kerry's Bay submissions to know what it's really like. That's just one point. It was fantastic when he said we're working on mitigating the disruption from the 135 metre water extension. It's a magic word mitigate, and you can use it till the cows come home. We welcome action. Right, throwing all that out because it's brief. I signal to you now, in all recent press coverage and all the verbal exchanges that I've had in this great atmosphere we have down there in Port about consultation, there's been no specific mention of the future noise created by the wharf extension. It's obviously going to be noisy building that, we know that. What will our lives be like once the wharf is operational? In response to Councillor Deeker's question about the mitigation fund idea, that's where those historic articles come in. Mr. Faulkner said it's a very good point in the board, we could consider that. In a way, we're providing the committee with cash to spend, that's the Port Environment and Noise Liaison Committee, with cash to spend. The mural is part of that. Well, the mural is a beautiful idea. It's a feel-good project. It's fantastic for the cruise ship passengers. It animates the buildings that are needing it. We then jump to the other issues of that committee and the mitigation fund, that we in Kerry's Bay were kept awake by Port Otago operations need our buildings soundproof, no matter where we sit on the noise profile. So that's the thing for that idea of that possible amenity mitigation fund as well. You jump to the Tailoring Beach issues, which were mentioned by Mr. I thought then exactly the same cruise ship, which are causing wave lap issues all around the harbour, visit Venice. Venice has wave lap issues. like they're coming from the north, with erosion tipping in our harbour. I invite the councillors to come to the public meeting on the 7th of November, which is the public meeting of the Port Environment and Noise Liaison Committee meeting at 7:15 p.m. I'll email Lauren that information. And
thank you.
I just wanted to say, Mr. Baker, on Monday night, that was a very, very good forum, the Reimagining the Harbour. Very positive and collegial, and I thought it was fantastic, the dynamics between this council and the DCT and everybody present on that council. Mr. Bodie has said the main focus of the regional council has been fresh water in the past, and now the time has come to reduce the harbour and the coast. And I agree, there are very disaffected groups all around the harbour. We all need to be positive, honest and transparent in addressing the issues arising from the growth of Port Otago Limited and the physical growth of ships that are wider and longer, mentioned by Mr. Bolt, the Port Otago employee at the meeting. Port Otago has a technical committee, this was mentioned by the marine science professor, Chris Hepburn, and I would suggest that this idea of a committee, harbour slash community slash culture committee, be reinvestigated. It could be positive. I mean, the harbour is a living entity, and the human inhabitants around the lower harbour, most of the operations need to be. We just all be cleaned up, and as Professor Hepburn said at the forum, this needs to be like the bottom-up initiative where everybody supports it, and it's a positive thing. And I just feel that that meeting on Monday night was a fantastic meeting.
Okay, thank you very much, Mary, and thank you for those complimentary comments of the Chief Executive at the forum on Monday night, and thank you for the information about the upcoming meeting of the Port Liaison Committee on the 7th of November. Any questions in terms of clarification about Mary's submission?
I just have one. I'm sorry, Mary, I come from Central Otago, I'm in the Dunstan ward, so I'm not quite up with that issue that you're raising, but I just need to understand, you have concerns around the mitigation of noise and from the port and its operation. Is the aim of yourself, and I'm sure you represent other folk in the community as well, to stop the Port of Otago from expanding its operations? No. So it's really
to... rears its ugly head every time. Of course not. Port Otago, we love Port Otago. But we want to be better and we want to be heard about our issues. Because Port Otago moved by reclaiming the water and by making sure it's fantastic operation for the whole of Otago, though, the noise generated by the operations after the boiler point reclamation has really impacted on the people of Kerry's Bay in a way that it hasn't in other parts of Port Chalmers who have been historically affected by the port. Go to the 2GP submission all in there. The QCC 2GP submission.
Thank you, Mary. Any other queries? Councillor Scott.
It was a question, a point of clarification. I thought one of the positive things that came out of the presentation from the port was that they were taking noise level readings, DBA. I'm not 100% sure where they were taking it, though in my mind it must have been at the end of the existing wharf. Like, are you aware of that as your lies? Because obviously where the noise levels readings are taken from, the location, and how that process is managed is quite significant. You know, so there's some clarity around what the noise level actually is, you know, at the wharf and at different parts of the community. Are you aware of that? And is the Port Liaison Group part of that process to... you know, to discuss how that information is put together?
Yes, I've been part of that.
Yeah.
They're now, with the new wharf extension, there is a noise monitor on a big pole right there.
Yeah.
And then they're putting a new permanent noise monitor in almost a direct sight line in Henry Street, Herries Bay.
Okay.
About, I don't know, several hundred metres away from me. Where I'm situated, it's 210 metres away from the 55 dBA line, but I'm still affected by the noise despite the fact I'm in a sound insulated
I won't get into a debate on that, but
cool.
but there is science around noise level,
yes.
And how it's interpreted, and I'm sure if people follow that, then they won't be far off.
Yes, I agree. It's all about interpretation of data.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to be here with us. Okay, moving on. We've got a presentation from the Otago Rescue Helicopter Trust, and we've got with us Ross Black, Martin Dippy and Graham Gale. So welcome, gentlemen, and on behalf of all of us and the region, thank you for all that you've done over the last 20 years. It's no mean feat in terms of what you achieve, not only financially, but the essential service that you provide as well. So thank you. Feel free, gentlemen, to come up to the table if you wish. So, Ross, we're in your hands. You do present your PowerPoint presentation. No doubt there'll be some questions.
Thank you, Chairman, and good morning, councillors. Excuse me. I'd just like to acknowledge my two companions. Martin Dippy is attending as the recently appointed Deputy Chairman of the Trust. More significantly, Martin has agreed to step up as Chairman as soon as he manages to persuade the incumbent to retire, and we have agreed that will be at the end of the current tender process. And, of course, alongside Martin is Graham Gale, well known to you all, and the man who actually makes the rescue helicopter happen and makes it and whose leadership ensures that it is the most effective and most respected rescue helicopter operation in the country. We managed to get our reports printed in time to send them to your homes, and you've had a chance to read them, which we were pleased to be able to achieve, and we'll do that in future. You're familiar with this material. I'm just going to refer to one or two key points. The 765 emergency patients is quite significant. That averages out at two patients a day. And for those of you who are observers of the rescue helicopter or live alongside its flight path, you'll wonder how it counts so low, because we seem to be a lot more active than two per day. We have some days when we don't have a mission. Yesterday there was one during the day, and then that was to Southland, and there was one in the early hours of this morning to Wanaka. So I guess that's, you know, in that little period, there's our two a day. But we do have some days when there are no calls, on occasions we have days when we have 5, 6, and 7 missions. There are times when, through mission overlap, because our average mission time is about 1.75 hours, with mission overlap, you can have a second emergency while the first is still underway, or, you know, that after the 1.75 hours they've got to get back and refuel, some quite often change crew. And then get back in the air, so that's a couple of hours. So the second machine is on its way, and as I think you're familiar, on a number of occasions we use a third, and very occasionally we use a fourth machine. We're very lucky. We're the only rescue helicopter service in the country that has access to as many machines as we have. We have the two black machines, which are permanently dedicated to the trust. So we lease those from Heli Otago. They're permanently set up and used exclusively for rescue helicopter. Graham also has three or four other similar machines, two of which, at his own expense, are fully equipped with oxygen and winch and night sun and all the rescue and the radios, emergency radios, all the capability. They turn up in various guises. One's red, one's black, and one's white, I think, isn't it, Graham? On those occasions, we're able to hire those machines in at short notice on a very favourable arrangement that we have with Graham to provide that overlap service. So, 1,332 hours, that's a lot of mission hours. Remember that 45 or 50 minutes gets you from here to Wanaka, 55 minutes to Invercargill, and 55 minutes from here to Queenstown. So quite a range is covered in an hour. And as we've observed in the report, that is getting close to the total capacity of two machines. And that total capacity is determined by the maintenance requirement. Every 50 hours, a machine has to come out of the air and be checked. And there's a prescribed check process for that 50-hour check. There's a 100-hour check, which incorporates a 50, but it's a whole lot more rigorous. And then what's the big one? 1,400. 1,200. We've got 1,200 coming up on one of our black machines, and that's a full airframe check. So everything gets stripped out, and every welding joint and every moving part and every cable is very thoroughly checked. A massive check. Graham is extraordinarily competent in planning for those checks and having them undertaken by contractors in an amazingly efficient manner, which gets that machine back in the air in short order. So there is quite a maintenance requirement, and that along with the emergency missions comprises the life of the availability of a helicopter. Turning to the financials, we've fallen short there. We had total donations, income and interest of $7.029 million. Our total operating expenses, $7.039 million. We unfortunately had a shortfall of $10,000 for the year. You'd have think after 20 years that such competent trustees and operator would get that right, but that's less than 0.1%, and given the variables that we juggle, we're pretty pleased with that result. You know that we have operating reserves which adequately cover that. We live in hope that we'll generate a small surplus in the future to repay that. Very significantly in our funding is the $761,000 of community and private donations that we received, of which the Regional Council is our most prominent and most long-standing contributor, for which we're extraordinarily grateful. And I've stressed that to you on numerous occasions, and I never want to miss an opportunity. That reassurance that we know that we have your support on behalf of every member of the broader community is a major source of confidence for trustees. And we don't take it lightly. We thank you. And we also recognise that when you look around the possibilities in the community, there are a few opportunities that present as attractively as the Rescue Helicopter Trust, which potentially benefits every single member of our community, but in effect brings greater benefit to those living in the outer regions as well as those who visit the outer regions. And so we applaud you for that continuing support. $760,000 is slightly less, or it's materially less than last year, but it is in line with our long-term average. Last year was a glorious year for donations. We had one or two very significant donations, one-offs, one of the more significant being Martin's initiative with Mitre 10 and Amalgamated Builders, who built a house on the Mitre 10 property and then auctioned it, and the trust benefited from the from the margin that was generated from that. So this year's donations are consistent with our long-term average. Also, absolutely delightful to receive bequests this year of $897,000, and the significant contribution was $770,000, which was one third of one man's life savings. He's entrusted to trustees to ensure that our rescue helicopter service continues to be one of the best equipped and able in the country. And you know, significantly, in the donations, I'm going to refer to the Clinton Lions in just one moment. But just last week, a lovely local lady, went into the rescue base at Tyree and handed over a cheque for $20,000. It's the third cheque she's handed over. She prefers that to be anonymous. She made a similar donation last year and a slightly smaller one the year before. She admires our work. We asked if we've asked if she'd actually been in the helicopter or one of her family had been in the helicopter, because we know an awful lot of families that have had a family member in the helicopter and are just full of praise. No, she hadn't. She lives under the flight path and she hears the machine flying at all hours of the night in all weathers, and she's just so admiring of the work that Graham and his crew provide for the community, and she wanted to recognise that. I just want to stress the significance of the flight safety enhancement. We've detailed it technically in the report for you, and I interpreted that and wrote it so that it would be in layman's language. But it's absolutely magic. And I just want to share an experience with you. A few weeks ago, Graham and I flew down to Clinton to meet with the Clinton Lions. A relatively small Lions group who had staged a fundraising project, as they do every year, and from the proceeds of that, they presented the trust with a cheque for $50,000, which is absolutely brilliant. And we have a whole range of similar groups throughout the region who support us on an annual basis, some annually, some biannually, but absolutely brilliant. We deliberately took one of the black machines because I wanted to experience, and Graham wanted me to experience this latest safety enhancement. Trustees have been very, very mindful of safety enhancement all the way through. We actually, under health and safety law, have a responsibility in the chain. We don't have a lot of opportunity to influence flight safety, but clearly, as the principal holders of the contract, we do have that legal responsibility. We've always been reassured by knowing that we had an operator who was so safety focused and had such a brilliant track record. Graham has continually come to the trustees over the years and promoted innovation in safety, and trustees have always been supportive. If it's made good sense and it was going to improve the safety of our crews and our patients, trustees have been supportive, and our community has been on special occasions when we've needed some special funding to cover those funds. The community organisations have been great in terms of their support. I've owned my own plane for 20 odd years. My plane had digital screens and safety. I've understood a lot of this, and felt that I understood what Graham was putting into his machine. It wasn't until we flew back from Clinton the other night. It was pitch dark. There wasn't one bit of moon. It was visiting another part of the world. It was absolutely pitch dark. We had night vision goggles, which are amazing. But still, you are up in the dark, and unless there is some source of light on the hills and the mountains around, you know, you're in a risky environment. There's absolutely no doubt that nighttime flying is very much, you know, involves very much greater risk and need for much greater caution and situational awareness than during daytime operations. Then bring in low cloud and driving rain and low freezing levels, which you've got to remain below. You're to get into central Otago, in fact, to get out of Dunedin, you're often in gullies, below hilltops, below mountaintops. There is a need for the greatest confidence of your environment and your distance from the hills. And it's easy to describe. Come along in one of our machines. We don't offer these trips, but if you did, you know, you would immediately recognise your vulnerability and the value of this safety enhancement. It is absolutely stunning. We took off from Clinton in pitch dark, and Graham pushed one button, and it took us out towards central Otago, where we picked up a GPS route that he's had created and the trust has funded, and it's the main GPS route from central Otago. We picked it up at medium height. You can go in three different levels, low level, medium and much higher. We picked it up at medium height, and totally hands-free, the helicopter did a gentle, you saw the light come on, the beacon came on to say we'd picked up the waypoint, and the autopilot just quietly turned us around and aimed us for Balclutha. Graham said, now we'll go down to low level. So he pushed another button to take us down to low level. That gets a bit scarier. You can start to see that, you can see the buildings, the lights on and buildings and so on. We were flying hands-free. We could have been in cloud. But you could just see how safely we were flying on a precise route that's been worked out to be the safest possible route in terms of distance from any hills or, anything and air corridors that might contain other aircraft. And as you approach Balclutha, there is a choice to turn left to go to the Balclutha Medical Centre or turn right to go to the airfield if you need fuel. We didn't need either of that, so we headed on to Tyree. There's a choice of going direct to Tyree or going to Dunedin Hospital. Dunedin Hospital veers off and flies over our lovely lady who's just made that impressive donation. And this safety is utterly amazing. You're flying along through little, you can see it on the screen, the helicopter's flying through little boxes, and you can see these little boxes on the screen flying out ahead of you. That's just a visual check for the pilot. But you could have been totally surrounded in cloud and totally confident that you're flying safely. And to have all of this capability in a helicopter and hooked up to an autopilot so it's hands-free and allows the pilot to relax and observe his environment, to constantly monitor his equipment and the information he's receiving, just is an unbelievable advance in safety assurance. And it's safety for our precious crews and the patients and doctors and paramedics that fly in the back. And so I just wanted to take this opportunity to let you sense the enthusiasm of an old pro. I thought I understood how good it was. Having flown it, I'm just ecstatic. It is brilliant. I just wish we'd had it sooner. But this, as we've stressed to senior staff from the Ministry of Health and ACC, should become the aspirational standard for the future. But that standard should never be pegged in time. We need people like Graham to continually explore these possibilities. This installation of Graham's is the first in the world in a helicopter, and that's happened out at Tyree under the leadership of our operational partner, and we're extraordinarily proud of that. I just want to touch briefly on the new procurement process. This is being led by the Ministry of Health on behalf of ACC and possibly including also the DHBs. And those three are the main users of the rescue helicopter, those three entities or three agencies, police and search and rescue and the National Search and Rescue Organisation comprise 5 or 7%. But those three agencies, ACC, medical emergencies, which is the Ministry of Health, and then the DHBs are the core users of the service. So they're conducting a tender process, and it's quite a formal process, which will determine the future contract holders of the contract and the future providers of the service. And they're well through that process, they tell us. They're shortly to publish their determined requirements that hopeful suppliers will pitch against. It's quite significant in that it signals a changing role for the trust. Originally we started this service. Two or three of us got together and formed a trust. We approached the Regional Council and every business entity and organisation in Otago. We raised the $3.5 million to set the trust up, to put all the medical equipment into the helicopter, to build the helipad on Dunedin Hospital, because the hospital couldn't afford to do that, and to underwrite the financial shortfall for the first 3 years. And then once we'd got that in place, we entered into a contract with Graham to provide the service. So it was a community initiative that set it up. These services existed in Christchurch, Wellington, and Auckland, but not in Dunedin or Otago. And similarly, those other services had been set up by their communities. So this was a community initiative set up by the community and then used by the government agencies, and the government agencies paid a contract rate, which was determined in those days by ACC, which was about 60 or 70% of the cost of the operations in the North Island. We realised that we had a much smaller community. We wouldn't be able to raise the sort of money that they were raising. We had to have a very much lower cost model. And so we chose to have a trust that didn't have a whole lot of employees. In fact, we had no employees. Trustees were very good at helping, and as chairman, I handled the administration, but I was very good at keeping that to a minimum, or very determined to keep that to a minimum. And for many years, we've operated on the smell of an oily rag. We are the lowest cost operator in the country, and we've needed to be because we've got the smallest community supporting us. And we didn't want to be on the telephone raising donations by telephone from housewives and from families that are trying to watch their evening news or have a meal at the end of the day. And that's worked very well. But over time, during this last 5 years, the ministry has become increasingly involved and made it very clear that they wanted to have a clearer say in running the process going forward, and we believe that's correct. It's become a much larger operation. We're a $7 million operation. That's too big for a community trust to be, which is staffed by volunteers, to be risking. And so we've decided going forward, and we've notified ACC and the ministry that we will not be participants in the new tender round as a trust. Graham intends to submit a tender for continuing provision of the service, and as a trust, trustees have felt thoroughly justified in supporting Graham's initiative and supporting it wholeheartedly and openly. He's so ably demonstrated his commitment and his service to our community. We think we're totally justified in being biased in our unquestioning support of Graham through this process. It does represent a change for the trust. It represents a change for Graham, and as I've identified, it creates uncertainty for Heli Otago and their crews as they work through this process. That can't be avoided. The Crown's obliged by rules, tender rules, to go through this process. We all know that, and we all have to live with that. Trustees are being as supportive as they can of Heli Otago and the crews through this process. What I do want to just stress is that trustees have absolutely stressed to the ACC and to Ministry of Health that although we don't intend being a contracted party going forward, we intend being very keen observers going forward. And on behalf of our community, we see a very definite and a very critical role for the community to continue to be involved. We want the community to continue to be supportive. We want the community to continue to provide the high-end medical and search and rescue capabilities that the government couldn't justify. We want the community to be involved in the training so that our crews are trained well beyond standard benchmarks to the optimum level of currency and competence that is possible. We want the community to be involved so that we have a voice in the continuing structure of the service and maintenance of the service as we know it. And this is more important for our region than any other region in the country. If you add in Southland, which we are irrevocably committed to, we're 25% of the whole of the country, with two relatively small population bases and a growing population base in Queenstown and Wanaka. We've got the largest territory. We've got the vast. It's vast. It's isolated. We've got the mountains. We've got the lower freezing levels in the winter. It's the most challenging area to cover, and so many of us are so dependent on that lifeline. And as health services increasingly, as the higher end health services increasingly become concentrated in Dunedin and in Christchurch, it's just that the role of the helicopter for those who live in the regions and those who visit the regions. And a very significant number of city dwellers in the South Island visit Central Otago throughout the year, along with a lot of other visitors too, of course. But it's critically important that we retain the service and continue to look to ways to enhance it and to grow it. And that is the future that we see for the trust and for the community support. And we've pledged that support to. On the community's behalf to the Crown, and told them regardless of their response, we intend being very active observers and commentators of the service going forward. And so with that, I just conclude with my final slide, which is from trustees and from our operator, a very genuine thank you to councillors for your continuing support.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ross. And once again, just on behalf of everybody here, I just want to acknowledge, you talked about the generosity of some of the donors, Clinton Lyons, etc. Just want to acknowledge the generosity of the trustees, the other four, I think the six trustees, I believe.
Six, yes.
Six. And the generosity of Graham as well. You know, you obviously put a huge amount of your own personal time and the skills that you bring to the trust as governors, which clearly by your financials you talk about a $10,000 loss, but clearly you've been financially successful over a long period of time, and we all really appreciate that. Questions? Councillor Laws.
The bit at the end I was intrigued by. Are you saying that you're not going to be doing this service anymore?
No. At the moment, the trustees hold the contract with ACC and the Ministry of Health to provide the service, and so we receive contracted funding, which was determined nationally 6 years ago, and it was based on actual costs in 2011-2012. A contract was determined, which funded, in our case, about 80% of our costs. The rest we had to raise from the community. And so the trust has been at risk for that 20%. The trustees have been at risk for that 20%. And as our volumes grew, and the moment we signed that contract, our volumes started to increase. There was clearly some new clinical pathways which meant more people were taken directly from scene of event, whether it be accident or medical emergency, directly to Dunedin Hospital. If you're a burns patient or a neck patient, you're now taken directly to Christchurch Hospital, so that you're not in and out of on and off stretchers or in and out of medical facilities. You're directly to the experts who can treat you best. There's been a number of health pathway improvements which have increased the use of helicopters. and there's a number of other drivers have increased the use of helicopters. We've seen a 40% compounding growth during the first 3 years of this contract,
okay,
which pushed us into a second helicopter,
yes,
and left us very significantly financially exposed. That's been an ongoing debate with the Ministry of Health and ACC about the funding for that second helicopter.
Sorry.
So going forward, we're not going to sign that contract. We've suggested that the Crown should contract directly with the operator, and they should pay the price the operator tenders. The trust, and we have yet to have the conversation with them, but we've said to them, you make the case for the role of the community, and trustees will sit down and talk to you about that.
So, sorry, which one of you flies the...
Graham.
Yeah.
Graham, you fly. So you're contracting, you've entered the bidding process, or have you?
Yeah, we haven't seen what or how the contract or the tender is going to look yet. But it's got to be on a commercial basis, the sustainable model that's to provide the service. What Ross mentioned before, 2011-2012 was the funding that was supplied, and we've had this massive growth of compounding 40% through the years, and never kept up with the amount of growth. I think probably this, it may be timely, for this contract, coming up, but it does get rejigged, and we do get on a proper footing for sustainable funding for the model.
But you could lose that bid to a rival agency who could bid.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question, and I think there's interest from overseas, from Australia, there's four bidders from Australia that are looking very seriously at this contract.
Is it just for Otago, or is it nationally?
Nationally.
Yep.
Nationally, and obviously picking eyes out of it as well. there's a serious piece of business that, and we're very serious about, retaining, a role in the community. The community's been very good. We've supported the community. The community's supported us 100%. The Otago Regional Council supported the service 100%. And we're healthy to make sure that it's retained here. But, we have got some big players coming into the market.
Well, presumably, are they going to be contracted to perform the same services as the Trust has been performing over the last 3 or 4 years?
You would have to think so. We haven't seen the specifications
right
of what the contract's going to look like yet. But, you would have to think that it'll be a level of specifications. And to be honest, I think, probably where we're at, we keep getting told that we're oversupplying with the level, but I'm just not sure which part of safety that they want to cut out of it.
So, but the issue here is they're asking for a national contract, which does all helicopter rescue services throughout New Zealand for ACC and the Ministry of Health. They've combined that.
Councillor, they haven't actually issued their tender documents, so
we're punching
clouds. We don't know what that tender document is going to say. They're involved at the moment in a pre-consultation process, and I think it'd be fair to say that Graham's been to a number of those consultations, and the Trust had a one-on-one meeting with senior representatives of the Ministry of Health and ACC. We've all been impressed with the level of competency and the seriousness of their approach. So we're impressed with their initial approach. The next test is going to see this document that comes out. You've then identified the risks that are inherent in any national tender.
When's that expected to?
Soon. It's weeks away.
Oh, before Christmas, though.
Oh, yes.
Councillor Scott.
I mean, the community, the region, has obviously been in debt to Ross and Graham and their team to take a rescue helicopter, the wonderful job that they have done over time. I'm just trying to understand, what's been outlined here. Maybe it's just the natural evolution of an organisation going to its next step. But you've talked about your 80% from your contracts and your 20% or numbers like that in terms of sponsorship and donations and bequests. So what actually is the role of the Trust? Is there an element of risk
in terms of how this change is perceived? How are you going to manage that change? Are you still expecting to get your 20% of donations? And what is, have your expectations of the helicopter entity changed or evolved? For example, Graham's team lost the tender. What would you do with that 20%?
Probably better to say that I think Graham's team didn't win the tender rather than lost it.
No, fair enough.
We are
the number one donator. I don't think it's an unreasonable question.
No, look, it's not. And
I'm trusting with the thinking that you people do over time that you'll have the right answer.
Look, you're identifying an extension of the same question that Councillor Laws asked. There is uncertainty, we have to be big people about that.
Yes.
The Crown is obliged to run through this process.
Yes.
That's a requirement. They're required to run through this process.
But they're
required to be responsible in their discharge of that responsibility. They're very aware of the reputation of this service. They're very aware of the reputation of this trust. They're very aware, of the ability of the players here to articulate their cause. You can't be confident of the outcome until we know. But I'm as confident as it would be possible to be, given all of the uncertainties, that sensible people will be keen to ensure that Haole Otago remain involved in provision of the service in this region. It is the most demanding region in the country. It has unique challenges that don't present in other parts of the country. It would be a very brave person that bypassed such an experienced and time proven and respected operator. I can't say more than that.
No, that's fine.
If they chose to, I would say, I'd have a lot more to say. But I don't think this is a service where I don't think this is a service that can be trucked in and reheated. This is an extraordinarily specialised, sophisticated operation with an amazing requirement for safety and experience.
Well, maybe that's what needs to be pushed for, is that the tender documents take those attributes into consideration. It's not just about the dollars, it's about safety, it's about knowledge.
Brian, we've pushed that. We've pushed that as hard as we can. And we were dealing with senior people. They're very aware of our feelings on this issue.
Thank you.
Councillor Woodhead.
Good financial result, Mr Chairman. 10,000 out of 7 million. Not many budgets get that close, so well done, with all the variables you operate in. Several times in the last few years, you've reported to us about the lack of ability to reach agreement on the secure funding for the second helicopter. And you've already mentioned that the requests or the use of the service grew dramatically after the 2012 contract was signed or whatever. And you've expressed to us, and certainly to me on numerous occasions, enormous frustration with that, and it caused a lot of heartache for the trust. And in fact, you had to fund, and I think last year you had to fund your own cash flow until the full year's funding came in, or you reached some sort of agreement towards the end of the financial year. What was the problem that allowed that issue to go on for so long? Because you've only recently concluded it, haven't you, and agreed?
Yes, and thank you. That's a very fair and a good question, and I wish I knew the answer. good people just didn't seem to be able to get on the same page as us, and as you observe, it's been a 3.5 year process. And it just took too long, and consumed far too much resource from our end and at the other end with the agencies. However, there has been a change in management within the National Ambulance Sector Office, NASO it is. There has been a change of management, and that has been a very welcome change, and we credit that change with having assisted to find a resolution. We not only achieved a resolution to the funding requirement for the last financial year, which is finished on the 30th of June, which we're reporting here. We also said, now while we're about it, let's sort 2018 now, because we're not prepared to continue having this conversation for a fifth year. And they've responded to that, and we've agreed the funding and we've received it. So we're very grateful that that's been resolved. We recognise those that have made that possible. I think that's really all I want to say.
Yep,
thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Kempton.
Yes, just very quickly, thank you for the report, Ross, it's excellent. I think others have attempted to ask the same question, but I'll put it directly. We give you $350,000 a year. In the change in the operating model, no matter who flies the helicopters, that's irrelevant, will there still be a requirement for that money? And what would it be used for? That is the new contract expected to pay 100% of the cost of operating the service on a commercial basis, and therefore what would any additional funding be required for?
Look, that is the $64,000 question, Trevor.
Okay, so it goes that far in the uncertainty.
And we don't know the answer. We are insisting that the contract recognises the actual cost to the operator, and there has to be an appropriate margin in those costs to keep the operator financially viable, and the Crown do understand that, we've yet to see how they're going to define the service. You know, what is the level of service the Crown seeks. And once they do that, there'll then be an opportunity for us to assess the level of service that the community might aspire to.
Okay, got it.
And so there is a whole new conversation for us to have with Council. And I've been keeping your Chairman and your Chief Executive abreast of our understanding of that process. But you know, as I've said before, we're looking around too many corners in terms of trying to anticipate that outcome. But there is a fresh conversation to be had. The role of the Trust going forward is yet to be determined, and the appropriateness and the role of the Regional Council and Community Donation also yet to be determined.
So there's no certainty around the level of enhancement and therefore the level of finance that would be needed to create those enhancements, and we're just not going to know that for a while.
No.
Thank you.
No.
Okay, that wraps it up. Just a couple of things. If there's anything that the, and I'm thinking moral support here from the Regional Council. Oh, sorry, Councillor Hope.
Mr. Gale, I'd just like to say thank you for all that you do when you fly. We live on the flight path at the back of Middlemarch. We see you every day or every couple of days in your helicopter and your pilots, and I think what you provide is a fantastic service, and I did listen to you, Mr. Black, the need for greatest confidence, safety enhancement and safest possible route. All this capability constantly monitoring his environment and your equipment. Some days my husband says to me, I really don't even want to see that pilot, but on other days we say, we know we're an hour and a half from town, but we're 5 minutes in your helicopter. So we think you provide a great service, and I'd just like to say thank you. But to you too, and to you also.
Thank you.
Appreciate
that
very much, and
we
continue to support you.
Thank you. If I can just say something, for just 2 seconds. We're taking this very seriously on this whole thing, and it'd be absolutely devastating for us, and I think the community and that, and the support. The one thing we keep getting thrown out you know, they want to roll out their target model throughout the country, and that's been communicated out through John many times. You know, we were the ones that bought MBG, not being built, not just here in New Zealand, and we rolled it out into civilian use in Australia through air training we did with bringing people down to New Zealand. We are the first helicopter, and still have the only two helicopters in New Zealand's history to operate on PDN RNP. I won't bore you with that, but it allows us to fly at low levels, narrow heights. We are the only helicopter in New Zealand which has synthetic vision. You know, we are the only operation in New Zealand, we are the first operation in New Zealand's history to put in PDN routes, low-level routes to access some of these hospitals in some of these areas. It could never be done before and never be done safely. 2 weeks ago, I had an operator, Metro Aviation, Mike Stanbury, from the States, from the US, who operates 165 helicopters on MS-93, bring in, said he was going to come down and see me in a few days' time. I've never met the guy before in my life. He has been to New Zealand and has offered us Ross doesn't even know about this yet, offered us an enhancement to put into the helicopters that'll be monitored through their comms room in the States, so when we're flying at night, they can actually see what the helicopter's actually doing, and we're in real time. They've got their own satellite. It's cost them $18 million just to put this program in place. And he can call up and say, Hotel Uniform Afar, I see you've got a number one low oil pressure. Would you like me to go through the emergency checklist in real time, talking to someone in the push button? This is a world first. They're anywhere else, and we've been offered that. He wants to use us as a testing ground for the lower latitudes in the world. So we are a pretty good sparks, we do get talked about a little bit around the world too, so it's not just that little bit we do in Moscow.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. All I was going to say before, in terms of moral support from the chairman or the chief executive, I'm sure that would be forthcoming if that's appropriate for the tender process. You know, we're here, obviously, to support in any way, shape or form that... If that's a help. And the other point is your retirement. Whenever it happens, I'm sure that there'll be an appropriate recognition of your long commitment to the 20 plus years commitment to the Otago Rescue Helicopter Trust. So thank you, and we look forward. You may not look forward to retirement, but we look forward to recognising your contribution at an appropriate time. So thank you very much, everyone. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ross.
Okay. Moving on to the confirmation of the minutes from the last finance and court held on the 13th of September.
Yes.
I'll move from the chair, seconded by Councillor Wharton.
Sure.
Sorry. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carry. Moving on to the director's report. Nick, is there anything you want to highlight?
No, I could just take it as read. It does have an update on where we've got to with property in Queenstown and Alexandra.
Excellent. Any questions? If not, would someone like to move the two recommendations?
I will do.
Move Councillor Bell, second with Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carry. Moving on to the public transport update. Welcome, Jared. Do you want to come forward and sit in Councillor Bodecker's chair?
No, he's not.
Welcome, Jared. A fair bit covered off in here, which is all good. Would you like to speak to your report?
Chair, the report is being read.
and happy to take any questions. Well, I think I'll just a brief overview about the Cooley Town Integrated Program Business.
Okay. Any queries and or questions? I suppose, importantly, thank you for your facilitation role in terms of sorting out the school bus Term 4 service. And I know ORC are playing a relatively low-key role in that regard, but clearly you've done a lot of work behind the scenes to pull that off. Questions, queries for Gerard? Councillor Scott, then Councillor Wade.
Yeah, I mean, we'll move on to the Queenstown one, but other than that, are we on top of the missed trips situation where there was a limited pool of drivers available?
If I can, through the chair, we have had another couple of recent incidents, a few on the weekend, and one yesterday. I'm happy to report to council that neither of those are related to any driver shortage. And for council, can I put things into a little bit of context? One missed trip is less than 0.1% of the services that are on day. But both our operators know that a missed trip is totally unacceptable for this council and for the community, and that's come on day. Richie's have put in additional procedures again as a result of yesterday. They have two standby drivers available at the beginning at the end of the service, which are undertaking other operational activities in and around the depot.
Councillor Scott, are you finished with your question?
That's good. You're good.
Councillor Woodhead, then Councillor Neil.
Just a question for Mr. Collings on the notice of requirement process for the bus hub, and working good short update there. That's good. We're still on target for, I think, April next year. We're hoping for implementation.
Subject to the statutory process, yes, we are.
Yep. Good. Thank you,
Councillor Neil.
Just remind me to the chair, Mr. Collings, there is a financial penalty for missing a trip. That is the case, is that true?
There are financial, I don't like using the term.
No, it's the wrong word, sorry.
Is the wrong word. Yeah. There are liquidated damages that can be applied for missed trips and other non-performance within the contract.
Are they being applied as a consequence of this?
We're currently doing a complete audit of the missed trips. And where there is not good cause for the operator, then we
okay, any other queries? How about we just work through... Councillor Scott.
So did we ever find out roughly what it cost for the Peninsula and Port Chalmers additional services that were applied?
If I may, through the chair, the gross cost of the service is approximately $860 per day, which is we anticipate something along the vicinity of $15,000 with fee revenue, bearing in mind Term 4 with secondary school exams is possibly going to be slightly under that. Council's exposure is somewhere in the vicinity of $5,000.
Oh, okay, cheapest. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other queries on any of the matters?
Well, can I just ask on
Council
that?
Laws.
So that's the $5,000... for Term 4, we've made a policy decision, haven't we? I just wanted to clarify that we are not assisting into 2018. That's correct?
Correct.
Have we received any indication, because I can see this coming back to this table at the start of 2018 anyhow, have we received any indication yet as to whether there is a solution for 2018 onwards?
If I can, through the chair, in talking to both principals at Tahuna and Dunedin North Intermediate, they believe that they would be potentially looking at contracting themselves as an operator.
Yeah.
One thing we are doing is that I've offered to provide support for starting to look at some of those options for them, and to simply focus on the financial model.
That's those two schools. We also had Bayfield, I think, arrive here, and I know that, was it Otago Boys? Oh, Logan Park High School and some of the secondary schools were affected as well. Have you heard any more about that, or they have not been in contact with you?
If I can, through the chair, Logan Park High School were affected by programs to change the sex council. There has been no intention to
change that. Yeah.
The other schools, they are all being invited to the table in relation to that. It's probable that a number of the services we provide could adequately service the lives of the table.
Would that require changes to the school bus table to make that timetable to make that happen?
We don't. Are you talking about our?
Yeah.
Services?
No. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All set there. So, do we turn our mind to item 7, Queenstown Integrated Program Business Case? You were going to speak.
As was conveyed to Council in the workshop, I believe it was almost 10 months ago, this is a piece of work that's been undertaken or led by NZTA with direct involvement from Otago Regional Council, Queenstown Lakes Council and Queenstown Airport Corporation. QLBC have endorsed the Integrated Program Business Case as their strategic framework heading forward for transport solutions in the Waikato Basin. As a partner in this wider program, we are very much a minor partner. Our involvement being focused around PT facilities such as bus stops and shelters are currently funded by QLDC, obtaining their NZTA subsidy through our program. There's been no suggestion that would change. Our involvement in and around some of those facilities would be in the provision of technology to support the services and the services. In relation to the program, you'll see that heading out, we've got what's referred to in the program as water taxi services. They fall under the LTMA effectively as small ferry services or ferry services because of the capacity of the boats or vessels that are being used. And we're reaffirming with this council that we are intending to undertake a detailed business case for that this financial year. Further in the programme, there is also consideration of, or there will be consideration of, larger ferry services and whether or not they should be in the programme as well. There is also, in the long-term vision, the thinking of an alternative mass transport corridor, what that will be, depend a heck of a lot on the way that Queenstown develops over the coming years, but it is recognised that the main corridor between Frankton and Queenstown at around about 2030-2035 will not cope.
Thank you, Jared. And I just note in the last couple of paragraphs this integrated program business case has been endorsed by Queenstown Lakes and been presented to NZTA, so that's all in train, and you're obviously asking us to do the same here today to endorse the program. Excellent. Any questions for you, Councillor Kempton?
Just a couple of observations, Mr. Chair. I've got some concern about the population projections. And also, of course, the visitor number projections and airport movements, they don't add up. And where they're using somewhere between sort of low and high projections for population will be impacted by airport arrivals, which are rising exponentially. But I do think that my understanding is that the technical team, the staff team, which includes representatives of all the partners in this, are actually going to have another look at that. But that does have the potential to actually push some of the work that's in here forward. Now,
whether it does or not, there's a bit more work. All I'm really saying is that there's, I think there's some more work to do there. I think that there's some things that don't quite mesh. So, and I understand that that is being looked at. On the other hand, the mass transit proposition that's talked about long term here is one of the examples that's being used in the South Island Chairs Group's submissions to central government on land transport funding, on the basis that it may not look like a bus, it may not look like a road, but it might look like something much more exciting. And at the moment, that wouldn't respond to traditional funding mechanisms. And so that example specifically is being put forward by South Island Chairs, and there are a few other examples in the South Island, to central government to get them to say, you better think a bit differently about land transport funding. That's all I had to say. Overall, I think that's actually a really good piece of work. But when you think about $500 million or thereabouts in the preferred, the business case that's been advanced, then that's pretty substantial. On a national development basis, that's pretty substantial.
So Gerard, just on that topic, the program is a high level document. So going forward, picking up Councillor Kempton's population point, it's obviously flexible enough to take into consideration those sorts of adjustments as it moves forward? Or have you got a response to Councillor Kempton's
point? So in relation to the issue about rejection numbers that Councillor Kempton has raised, there appears to be a little bit of a disparity between what has been used within the immigrant program and the latest rejections coming out of Queensland in relation to the master planning. So this whole program will be tested all the way through. Each individual component of the program will have its own detailed business case. And it provides sufficient flexibility and timing to allow for changes to react.
Got heavy?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Any other queries, comments?
No queries, Mr. Chairman, but happy to move the recommendations and just acknowledge that there's a significant combined effort gone in here, and the key word to it all is integration. So it's across all transport modes, Queensland Airport involved, and Councillor Kempton's also referred to options and callings for the future, and a significant chunk of work in a reasonably short time, really. And so the group's come a long way. So happy to move the recommendations.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Woody. Thank you, Councillor Kempton. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Moving on to the financial report. This is the for the first 2 months of the financial year, July, August. Stuart with us? No. Nick, is there anything you want to comment on? Any variances that... or untoward or anything?
I'll take the report as read. Yep. Happy to answer any questions if there is any.
Any questions for Nick? If not, would someone like to move that the report is noted? Or received, a big pun. Move Councillor Hope, second of Councillor Woodhead.
Just one question, Mr. Councillor Chairman, Woodhead. And it'll come up a later date, but I just... want to ensure that everybody saw on page 16 note 4.4, the detail of what's not for today, but just have a look if you haven't already, and acknowledge which has been in the community too, the effort that was put in place there by council and council staff to get water off the Torrey. But it costs some money, serious money.
Thank you for pointing that out, Councillor Woodhead. Councillor Scott.
A separate query was just in relation to the notices of motion in relation to the Audit and Risk Committee on page 18.
They're non-public, I imagine. We're dealing with those.
Is that a different item? Is that this one?
No. So that comes under, we'll move into non-public and deal with those. That's what I assume is the normal process. Yes?
When we get to those, I thought we were on the finance report.
Yeah, so when we finish
Is that a separate... It's a different format. I'm trying to understand.
Okay,
is that a separate topic?
Yep, so is it's it? item 12.
Okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yep, no, it's okay. No problem. Any other queries? If not, it's been moved and seconded. Be received. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. We now need to move into non-public to deal with those minutes from the audit and risk.
Well, we've got... this is the public portion.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
So this recommendation is from public, and then there's separately, after that, we go in to do the...
Oh, sorry.
...in committee portion.
So 13 is public, 14 is non-public. Sorry, Councillor Scott. On item 13, it's in the public arena.
I don't know. 1 or 2 years ago, I actually asked that the audit and risk minutes would be put so we could have some type of feeling of what was actually going on. I know in the interim all councillors are invited to that particular meeting, but nevertheless, apparently you can't gauge from these minutes what's going on.
No, you can't.
So how do I determine what's going on if I haven't attended the meeting?
So Nick, you may want to expand on just focus on these items, or
general comment.
In general, I mean, this item here is the recommendations from the meeting, so it's not actually the minutes.
Yeah.
Now, whether those minutes have actually gone, have they been circulated fully? The full minutes that circulated. Certainly the ones for the in committee had were more detailed than this. But the recommendations that are here are just the resolutions that were passed.
Because is that public information?
The minutes are, yes. I thought that I thought they had been have the minutes of this but not been circulated to councillors. I thought they had as well.
No, but is it public information to the community?
Yes. The minutes of the agenda and the minutes of the Audit and Risk Committee are public, the same as every other committee, except for the in-committee portion that are not.
How does the community view those minutes?
On the website.
Yep.
And when the next meeting of Audit and Risk is held, the minutes are actually, in the same as every other meeting, are included in the minutes of that in that meeting as the minutes of the previous meeting. But in the meantime, once they're actually completed, they're put on the website.
Okay. Thank you.
No other queries? Councillor Scott, are you happy to move that the recommendations of the public portion of the Audit and Risk Subcommittee meeting held on the 13th of September 2017 for adoption?
Not really.
Okay.
Because I don't really have a feel of what they mean or what the implications are.
Someone else happy to move that way? Councillor Robertson?
Happy to second. Understanding again, you've already said it's just the recommendations. These aren't the minutes. These are recommendations from the Audit and Risk Committee.
Nevertheless, the point stands.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against, carried. Now, moving into non-public. So I will move, second to the Councillor Hope, that we move into non-public to deal with item 14. Councillor Hope. Sorry. Okay. Also, any comment, Nick, in regards to this non-public section?
This is in a separate attachment. If you do look here, the item that there is there. For the matters for noting, again, is just the recommendations. This does have the actual minutes attached to it above, which gives a bit more detail. Going back to the previous one, I'm not 100% sure where the actual minutes are for the other ones. Other in the attachments.
Everyone comfortable?
Yep.
Or anyone uncomfortable?
Sorry, have we... Somebody yep. actually got it, have they?
Yep.
So
it's on your...
the third
attachment.
Third attachment.
Agenda.
The finance and
corporate in committee.
So someone happy to move that we adopt
I those? Am, Mr Chairman, yes.
Thank you, Senator Councillor Hope. Any discussion, questions?
Quite happy.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. That, far as I know, concludes the finance and corp. Yep.
And go out of committee.
Yeah. We need to go out. I'll move it. We move out of committee. Second with Councillor Lawton. Put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. My understanding, lunch may be quarter of an hour away.
Yep. So let's, what's the communications next?
Yep.
Yep.
That's the way.
Cheering. Holy moly. Yeah.